Well, welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Glad you could join me. And now that the free agent fervor has died down a little bit, I want to take a look back at all the deals that went down, some of the stuff that didn't, with a couple of guys that have been around this league a long time. Start with Billy King, the former general manager of the Brooklyn Nets, the Philadelphia 76ers. I talked to Billy about the Paul George trade with Indiana. What happened from the Pacers' perspective? Should they have waited? And what about Gordon Hayward going to Boston? What does that mean for the Celtics moving forward? A little bit later on, Vinny Del Negro, the former coach of the Bulls and Clippers, he drops by. We talk about the fit of Chris Paul and James Harden playing together, Russell Westbrook and Paul George as well. A lot to get to with those two guys. So it's going to be a good podcast. Glad you could join me. Let's go. Joining me first on the pod, Billy King, the former general manager of the Brooklyn Nets, Philadelphia 76ers, doing great work now as an analyst over on NBA TV. And Billy, kind enough to join me here on the podcast. How you doing, Billy?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I want to give you an opportunity here, Billy, as you know, the resident Duke defender, to I want to give you a chance to lavish some praise here on Jason Tatum, who I've watched play in the Salt Lake Summer League. And look, I was skeptical of the trade that flipped the first and third pick. I still think the jury's out because I've also watched Markelle Fultz, and I think he's got great body control, and I think he can be a real superstar at that one position. But I tell you what, Tatum can play, and he's going to be able to score in this league at multiple positions, I think.
Well, the one thing I liked about him, and I saw him play quite a bit at Duke, is his length and his ability to iso with the basketball if need be. He can make a three, and I think his shot will get better work with Brad and his staff. I just think he had a basketball body built for the NBA, especially where the game is now. I think he can play. I think he'll end up being a very good four for them. But if you look at the trade, I think it would work for both. I think Sixers needed more of a Markelle Fultz, and I think that Boston needed a Tatum, and I think that he is going to fit ideally playing with Isaiah and playing with Jaylen Brown. I just think nowadays you've got to have guys 6'9", 6'8", long arms and with length that can stretch the floor, because if you watch in the finals, most of the time that's what was out there. You know, Draymond may have been the biggest guy on one team and Tristan Thompson the other team. So you've got to have versatility, and I think I just believe in Tatum, and this is not my Duke bias. I just think he has a chance to be the best player in the draft.
You know, when I watched him in the ACC tournament, and that was really the first time that I sat down and watched him play a bunch of games, which was a good time to watch him because he was awesome in the ACC tournament. I looked at him, Billy, and I saw kind of a Carmelo Anthony type of player to him, just with the way he was able to score. Not Carmelo now, but Carmelo at Syracuse, just getting where he wanted to get, playing kind of an NBA pro style. Is that too far to go with the Carmelo comparison?
It's not. I saw them. They played Florida State at Duke, and there was a stretches where they just came down the court, and you don't see this a lot in college, but they just gave him the ball and isolated. And he scored like four or five straight trips down the court, and then you're talking about guys that he was playing against that are going to be in the NBA. They were drafted in the lottery. So to me, that's what he does. I think he, Carmelo Anthony of young, yes, I think he has that ability, but. I think if Carmelo came in then, you probably could say, yeah, he could be a stretch forward. But when he came in, the power forward was a much bigger position. But I think now that guys like Tatum can be a stretch forward right away.
Yeah, it gives Boston another interesting young player on that roster. But let's stick with Boston for a second and the Gordon Hayward acquisition. Before we get to Hayward and how he fits with the Celtics, Boston right now, as we record this podcast on Thursday morning, They're scrambling to try to find some money to enough money to pay Gordon Hayward the full max deal that they offered him. They're canvassing the league at this point, looking for takers or at least offers for Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and Marcus Smart. If you were dealing with Boston in this moment, would you hold them over the barrel to some degree because you know they have to deal one of these guys to create room, or what would the negotiating tactic be with the Celtics if they were knowing what they have to do to clear this space?
Well, the teams that they're dealing with who have space, they're going to want something for it, because they know Boston has to make a deal. So they're going to hold out because, Boston has got the commitment from Hayward, so they're going to do everything they can to try to, extrapolate anything they can from them because those teams have nothing to gain, even though you're talking about good players, but they feel, hey, we're helping you get a better player. And so you've got to do something for us. So knowing those teams that are out there, I think they're going to they're going to sit back and wait and say, you got to give us something to take these guys on.
So what did you think of the deal, Boston getting Hayward? Obviously an upgrade. All they're giving up is money. But how much better do you think Gordon Hayward make the Celtics?
Well, he gives them a very smart basketball player that can handle the ball. I think he'll be a guy to be able to create for Isaiah. And he can make a shot, understands Brad. And the one thing that out of all of this that I think helps Boston is they have Brad Stevens. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in this league. And, you know, I was the one said I'm not sure if Hayward should go there just because, you know, Isaiah was the main part of the offense. But I think that's what Brad did, figured if we're going to score, I got to put the ball in his hands. I think now it's incumbent on Isaiah to realize, okay, I have Gordon Hayward. Now I've got to share the basketball. And by sharing is not figured I'm going to get all the shots in the fourth quarter. So, but that gives up another guy in the fourth quarter that can score. The other guys were very good, but they weren't able to score like Gordon Hayward would be able to score on his own, create a shot for others, knock down the three consistently. So I think it's a good fit if Isaiah and the rest of the guys are willing to understand that the offense got to change a little bit.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, it gives Danny a chance to be more judicious with making a deal. Now, he doesn't have to go out right away and find that big man or find that next piece, but I think he can wait and sit back and see who kind of emerges. Because right now, I don't think, and you can tell me if you feel differently, I don't see an obvious, you know, trade candidate. I think, you know, you might have to wait till midseason before somebody becomes truly available and you can make a deal. But I think Boston can sit back because, you know, you and I both know, I mean, if Boston wants to get somebody, they can probably get them. It just depends on how deep into the well of players and picks that they choose to go. But I think by midseason, we could see the Celtics sort of cherry pick the next player that's potentially available and add to this mix.
Well, if you look at the patience that Danny has really had in trying to make deals, he tried to make deals, but he waited for the deal that fit them. And so now I think you're right. I don't think they need to rush. And I said that. I know people were critical because they didn't get Paul George and, you know, all these assets. You know, I said, why is everybody panicking? I said, they had the best record in the East. They mm-hmm. got to the conference finals probably sooner than they expected. So there's no, you know, they're going to be a good team next year. There was no pressure on them. They had to get Paul George. Paul George would have been a great get and add Gordon Hayward, but now I think they sit back, relax, and let this team, you know, play because you have Horford, you have Hayward, you have Isaiah Thomas. You've got three veteran guys that are, you know, all-star players that know how to win. And now you got to integrate the young guys in because you don't want those guys sitting too long and not get the experience. So when they do get to the playoffs next season, those guys have that experience in games. I thought they did a great job with Jaylen Brown because he was able to play. Once the playoffs got there, they got to now do it with Tatum and Brown. And so when they get to the playoffs, these guys are ready to go, and it's not they're not scared when they get out there.
I agree with you from Boston's perspective, though, and not to ask you to pile on one of your former peers out there, but I still don't know what Kevin Pritchard and the Pacers were thinking. I don't understand what the rush was. It's not like that Oladipo Sabonis offer was all of a sudden going to vanish. I believe that offer was always going to be there. And I just feel like, Billy, that when you get to this point and Boston has that firm commitment from Gordon Hayward, there would have been, I think, a better offer from the Celtics. And I think the Celtics would be somewhat more emboldened about their chances of retaining Paul George long term, having sort of a quasi super team for him to suddenly join. I just don't, as more time passes, I can't wrap my head around the sense of urgency Indiana had to make that deal.
And that's the one thing. You don't know what takes place within the meetings with ownership, and Larry Bird is still a consultant there. It may be, hey, we want to start fresh. We don't want to go into training camp with a guy that doesn't want to be here. Our fan base don't, you know, realize he doesn't want to be here. So maybe let's get the deal done. Let's send him out west so we're not facing a Boston team with him and Gordon Hayward that we can, you know, takes it even harder to overcome. Let's do the best deal we can get out west and move on so we can start the season off knowing this is our team and we can sell it to our fan base and build and go forward.
Yeah, but wouldn't you have wanted to see what the Celtics would have offered? I mean, it's waiting a week.
Yeah, you could have waited a week, and knowing and dealing with Sam Presti, that deal may not have been there. Sam may have said, "Hey, if we don't do this now, it's not going to be here come July." Sam is one, when he says that, he'll move on and go to something else. So, if you look at the history of Sam, if you've dealt with Sam, he says, you know, we do this now or it's not going to be here, and it does disappear with Sam. He's a man of his word when he says it's not going to be there. So. They could have waited, and in Boston, if they didn't get Gordon Hayward, they may say, okay, you know what, we're not going to give you as much, and now there's, what do they get? So I always go back to, everybody killed Memphis when they traded Pau Gasol to the Lakers and saying they just gave him away, whatever, and they ended up with Marc Gasol, who was a pretty good player for them. So I think you got to wait, see how it unfolds, see what the players do for Indiana. Right now on paper, it doesn't look like, you know, it's good, but you never know.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience there with the Oklahoma City talks, perhaps in the Lopez Brook variety conversation.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of deals with Sam. Sam will put deadlines there, and he moves on and goes to something else. Yes, you know, it's he's not one to revisit things once he says he's not going to.
I don't know, man. I would have called his bluff. I just think Indiana goes back to him and says, okay, we'll do George for Oladipo, Sabonis. I can't fathom. And you're right about the Gasol part of it, like with market. I would have been okay if there was like a foreign player attached in the second round or some kind of draft pick. I just, you know, Oladipo is a good player, but he's making a shitload of money. And Sabonis has more of an upside, and he could turn out to be a quality starter in this league. When you're in Indiana's position, I just feel like getting draft picks is important, and not getting any was bizarre to me.
Yeah, well, the one thing is, if they were to, you know, wait, and, you know, what if they didn't, they waited, and then all of a sudden Boston doesn't get Gordon Hayward, they say, okay, we're going to wait you out because you're going to have to trade him, because it's going to come a point where, you know, he's leaving, and, you know, once you get in the season, people know, okay. And then Boston may say, we don't want to trade for him because he doesn't want to be here, so why would we give up anything because he's going to the Lakers? Because if you bring him in January or December, you know, how quickly is it going to connect, and is he going to be comfortable? So, you know, maybe he you know, goes to Boston, and Danny gives us a bunch, and he leaves. And now, so I think Danny probably would have been even more patient to wait him out and say, you know, at the end of the day, I'll give you our first-round pick for him, because we know you got to get, we'll rent him for that for the rest of the season.
And I tell you what, too, I know that Paul's made it clear that he'd like to play for the Lakers, but I like the deal for Oklahoma City, because you have to call his bluff to some degree. You have to say to, what's he going to be like, 28 next year, a 28-year-old Paul George, that you can leave. We'll put a max contract on the table. You can walk away from it. We'll be a 55-win team with the reigning MVP on our roster and one of the better front offices in the NBA. And you can leave, but you're going to go and play with Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and like the fifth worst team in the NBA next season. And I don't know, man. I just don't know if, as much as he might like want to play in Southern California, I don't know if he has the appetite to be on a team that could be that bad when he steps onto it.
Well, from Oklahoma City's standpoint, I think it was a great trade in the sense of, you gave up Oladipo, so one, you get off that contract, and you gave up Sabonis, so that's like a first-round pick, so to say,
right,
a rookie. And if Paul George leaves, you're off Oladipo's money, and so now financially you're better off. And so, I think that's why they didn't throw picks in, because of the chance that he may leave. And so Sam, I'll give you Sabonis, he can be your equivalent of a first-round pick. And I'll give you Oladipo because we got to make the money match, and he's an Indiana guy. But I can't give you anything else. And so for them, it's a low risk, high reward.
Sounds like the Pacers, like in that fight to be the god awful 8th seed in the East this year. What do you think? Like 35 wins in the East get you into the playoffs next year?
It could. It really could. Yeah. And I think that's a little bit of the Gordon Hayward looking at it, not just the fact of playing in Boston, playing with, you know, for Brad Stevens, but also if you look in the West, we barely made the playoffs last year as the 8th seed. Okay, the Clippers maybe fall back, but their other teams are so strong. And the thing about it is, you got to play Golden State 4 times. You've got to play Houston 4 times, San Antonio 4 times. So you're banging your head in Portland 4 times. You come to the East, you have some nights where you know, you can rest a little bit. And mm-hmm. you may not have to play, you know, or you can get up by big. So, and if you want to make the All-Star team, it's a lot easier in the East than it is in the West now.
Oh, this, I agree with you. To me, and I know people in Utah are angry, and I understand that completely, but this was a no-brainer. You go East, you're, you know, almost an automatic conference finalist. You have a chance to start the All-Star game, much less make it, but start the All-Star game next year and every year that you're in Boston. Plus, you're playing for Brad Stevens. I mean, I know people are calling him soft out in Utah, and you don't want to stick with the team that drafted you and helped develop you, but if you're, and I found this, Billy, maybe you can tell me if you agree, that when guys hit this certain age, at that end of that second contract, they start seeing their kind of basketball mortality, and they start to look at maybe the potential, at least the end of their prime, and to some degree, the end of their career. And, you know, I think Gordon Hayward, part of it was he looked at this and said, you know, this is going to be more fun. Like, this is going to be more, you know, a better experience for me over the next 3 years in every possible way than Utah could be.
Well, yeah, and I think guys now, like, the money is so big that, you know, to leave that money on the table for that extra year, it's not life changing. It's maybe for your grandkids life changing, but it's not mm-hmm. for them immediately. And so I think players that second, if you look at Chris Bosh in Toronto, he left after that second contract. You look at, you know, Gordon Hayward now, he leaves after that second contract. Guys are looking at, okay, what's the best basketball place for me to win? Because the money, I'm going to be really wealthy no matter what. So where is the best place for me to win? And that's what guys are now. They're making basketball decisions, not like, okay, I got to stay here because it's the most amount of money. It's what's best for me going forward. And it's a four-year deal. Well, you get it, you know, with an opt-out. So
yeah.
If things don't work, he can opt out, and he's still young enough to go get another deal. So the one thing when the league shortened the contracts, I think it allowed guys to really think about, when it went from 7 years, when I was there, six, to down to 4 and 5, guys can look at it and say, okay, it's 4 years to get it out. Okay, I'm there 3 years, and if it doesn't work, I can leave and go somewhere. And the one thing that's different in free agency now is the media. When I first came into the league in Indiana in 93, there wasn't social media. There wasn't, you know, all this on the internet and things like that. So players really focused, and they knew what their home team was about. They didn't know much was going on other teams. Now, with everything, with Instagram, Snapchat, all the stuff, they know what's going on in every city in the country, all 30 NBA teams. And so, and the players talk more and are closer. So they recruit nonstop, and when they go on these trips and All-Star game, they talk about what they do, what the team does, what they travel. There's a lot of things that teams do that the league sort of turns their eye to under the cap, with from meals when the team travels and breakfasts and different things that some teams just don't do. And that's something I think if the league wants to look at and say, what's the difference? If they just looked at what teams do, from little things, the breakfasts on the road, plus the per diems and things like that, that some teams just don't do.
That's interesting because, yeah, I got a couple of texts from small market team executives after the Gordon Hayward situation unfolded, that, you know, just frustrated by, you know, another marquee player going from small market to big market. Now, I mean, look, I grew up in Boston. It's not exactly this free agent bastion. Guys don't just roll through Boston as free agents because they want to go there. I mean, it's just doesn't kind of work that way. But, you know, beyond what you were just talking about, I mean, is there anything the league can do? Because we've seen Oklahoma City get hammered by the CBA rules at times. Utah, to some degree, gets hammered by it too, because Gordon Hayward, no matter what was happening, unless he had a catastrophic injury, he's opting out after year three, because we know the rules. 10 years in the league, different type of contract that you can get on a max deal. Is there anything the league can do as they move forward and start to try to level the playing field that makes sense to try to keep some of these players where they are?
Well, I mean, the one thing they may want to look at is, you know, if Utah could have offered him the 5-year max extension, maybe during the season, and say, all right, here's it, you know, we'll just give you the 5-year max now because we believe in you, and make it up to him to make that decision. If he's going to turn it down, then you know, okay, we may have to trade him because he's not willing to commit to us. And maybe that gives that home team a little bit more of an advantage. Where, you know, I know they have the super maxes and things like that, but I just think with where the money is and how big it is, I think small markets are going to continue to get hammered just because of the fact of when he went to Boston, not that this was a factor, you know, he goes to see the Red Sox, and so yeah. now he has a chance to talk to those players or see the fan support. You know, now they have, you know, last year was Tom Brady met with Durant. Yeah, Oklahoma City doesn't have that. Utah doesn't have that. And that's the advantage that some of those big market teams are just going to have, because they have assets that small markets don't have. And I think it's with the money where it's at, I think small markets are going to continue to struggle just because the bigger cities can offer more lifestyle for their family and different things that they just don't have in the small markets. And hey, I coached in Indiana and loved it there, and I still have an affection for them. And I think some of these places, I think Oklahoma City has great fan support, but when it comes down to it, players will end up choosing these bigger cities just because of there's more to offer, and it's unfortunate. And I think you've got to, the league's got to figure out how to give these teams more tools to lock them up before they become free agents. And I know the agents don't want to hear that, mm-hmm. but if they're getting rewarded financially, then they you're getting rewarded financially early, so it's a tough decision you got to make. But they've got to give these teams, small markets, more tools to lock them up before they get to free agency, and then leave it up to the player to walk away at that point from the money.
That's a great point, because if he did turn down a 5-year extension in February, I mean, or before February, then yeah. I think the Jazz would have been proactive in trying to make a deal then. All right, let me ask you.
And one little point on that, and that's one thing. I worked for Donnie Walsh, and that's one thing he did back then. He would try to sign guys to an extension in Indiana. This is back in 1993 under the old rules, before they became free agents, because he said it may overpay a little bit. I remember he signed Rick Smits to a deal that everybody thought was a crazy deal, and Rick accepted it, and Rick played into the contract. But Donnie said, I couldn't allow these guys to become free agents, because once they do, the chance of them leaving it may be there. Mm-hmm. So he would overpay a little bit more to get them locked up, and they stayed.
Yeah. I thought maybe the league will think about that as they try to fix this thing moving forward. Going from a team with, you know, first world problems, Cleveland right now, the third straight year in the finals, but you know, a little bit chaotic at the moment with Chauncey Billups turning down the president of basketball operations position there. I mean, from the outside, Billy, you look at that and you say, I mean, things must be a little messy right now in Cleveland if a executive novice, a guy that's never done this before, Chauncey, is turning down a position like that. What did you make of Chauncey's decision to do that, and just your read on what's happening in Cleveland right now?
Well, I think that, you know, Chauncey looked at it and said, okay, I know Dan Gilbert, I know Cleveland, reports for that about the money, I'm not sure, don't want to get in that. But I think he knows that at some point, if he interviewed Atlanta, Cleveland offered him a job, hey, the opportunity's going to come. There's no rush. I'm young enough, and I can keep gaining more experience and knowledge just from doing TV and talking to different people. And I'll wait to pick the right situation, because he's going into a situation, even though he's friends with Tyronn Lue, you have a coach in place. You have a team in place. There's not much he can do to, you know, go into it and say. And then the expectation is you got to get to the finals and you got to win right away. So you're not walking into a place where you can say, okay, I can build this up and hire my own staff, hire my own coach. So I think he's going to wait probably for the perfect opportunity. And from Cleveland's standpoint, I think Dan Gilbert, that's the guy he wanted, because he went after him and made an offer. It didn't work. And now he's got to look at it. It's okay, what's best for our organization going forward? You know, do I need a basketball operation? Do I just need a GM, or do I just promote from within and let them do it, which like he did with Griff? But I think they've got to make a decision, because agents and everybody are looking out there from the outset saying, who's going to be in charge? Who's going to be here next year? Who's going to be here the following year going forward? Because there's all this uncertainty. Is LeBron leaving? So you've got to try to, you know, let the agents know, especially what's going on out there, and so they all understand, okay, this is who's in charge. Okay, now we can go forward and do deals.
You think Gilbert's playing with fire here a little bit, because, you know, look, the GM doesn't take the floor, and LeBron's got his team, he's got his coach, he's got everything he needs to get back to the finals right now. But I would think that any little sign of instability would not be a good thing for the Cavs as they head into LeBron's free agency year.
Well, I mean, whoever gets that job, you know, one of the first meetings you have to have is with LeBron. Not that he's the, you know, pseudo GM, but just have a meeting with him and say, okay, you know, let me get your thoughts of the things that have been going on here, going forward, and from the past, and then let me tell you what my thoughts are. going forward, how I think we can continue to win and how we can continue to build this and keep it special and develop a relationship. I think you have to have a relationship with your players and you have to relate to the coach. But I would spend time talking to LeBron. Then I would talk to Tristan Thompson. I would talk to all the players and just find out from their point of view what they've liked about the organization, what they have not liked about the organization, and then you know, and have go forward with a plan. Okay, this is how we're going to go forward and continue to build, because culture is ultimately important. And if everybody understands, hey, we're all in this together, they still got a good team, but there's something that's amiss there. You know, when you lose your GM after 3 years, there's talk LeBron maybe leave it or not. You know, this it's coming from somewhere. So you've got to try to put all that to rest and say, hey, we're a family. We're going to keep this in, and we're going to work together.
All right, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the bottom half of the NBA right now, because we've seen a couple of teams over the last couple of weeks make decisions that largely means they're going to be bad, and they're intending to be bad next year. And I want to ask you about one that's, once again, pretty overt here, and that's Phoenix. With, you know, the Suns, they took a flyer on Paul Millsap. They tried to get in on Blake Griffin, but after those two things failed, they just decided that they're, you know, going to go all in on a total rebuilding job there. I get it that you're not going to be competitive in a Western Conference that's really tough, but I don't know, Billy, like, if you're Ryan McDonough, this just strikes me as almost career suicide there, or at least Phoenix Sun career suicide, that you do this and you make these moves and you're basically establishing that you're going to be like a 20-win team this year. What do you think of what the Suns have kind of decided to do right now?
Well, you don't know if that's direction getting from ownership. So I think, you know, ownership gives you direction and you try to execute the plan. So I think that's the only choice they have right now, is try to rebuild, because there's nothing they can do at this point to try to overtake some of those teams in the West. So I think they've got to just rebuild and rebuild slowly and have confidence the owner is backing you.
Yeah, that's going to be an ugly year in Phoenix, though. Yeah. That's not going to be pretty.
It could be.
Well, Billy, I always appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking some time to join me here on the podcast.
You're welcome. Take care, and I'll be following you on Twitter.
All right, thanks, Billy. All right. My thanks to Billy King for joining the pod. Up next, my conversation with former Bulls and Clippers coach Vinny Del Negro.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Joining me on the pod now is a former NBA coach, NBA analyst with NBA TV, Vinny Del Negro, kind enough to join me here. Vinny, how are you?
I'm doing great, bud. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, just trying to get through this free agency period. Before I get to some of the stuff that I want to dive into, just as a coach, how stressful is this time of year, especially when you have significant free agents that are making decisions?
Well, there is a level of, I don't know if it's stress, but anxiety in that sense, because you want to know what your team is going to look like. But, you know, every situation is different. Every situation is run a little bit different and who's running it. So ownerships are different. But at the end of the day, as a coach, obviously you want as much talent and as much chemistry on the team and as much continuity as you can keep, depending on the level of success you've had, whether you need to make a lot of changes. You know, there's injuries that are involved. There's obviously short-term contracts, long-term contracts, veteran minimums. There's a lot of things. There's exceptions. So a lot of things go into it to make all the numbers work and to put the team out there that you feel gives you the best chance.
I want to get into a bunch of stuff, including Gordon Hayward going to Boston. But, you know, what do you think the guy like Quinn Snyder is feeling right now? You know, having a guy that he kind of nurtured to this all-star level decide he wants to play somewhere else?
Well, circumstances, Brad was obviously Gordon's a college coach. They have a connection there. They've known each other. At that age, kids are very impressionable, and obviously they have a tremendous relationship and he feels comfortable, but you know, it happens. It's part of the business. Is it fair all the time? Of course not. But Utah was heading in the right direction, had taken their growing pains the last few seasons, and last year kind of took a step up, and now we're going to see how they're going to handle the loss of their all-star. So never easy to lose a talented player like that, but you have to get back in the chair, get back on the court, start putting your things together with the team that is constructed and figure out a way. I mean, no one's going to feel sorry for you. It's just part of the business, and you move on.
I want to get into Hayward in a few minutes and what he means to the Celtics, but I want to start with something that happened over the weekend, and that's Paul George going to Oklahoma City to play alongside Russell Westbrook. A year after Kevin Durant defects, they get another MVP-level all-star player in Paul George. When you look at first off, the fit of Paul George alongside Russell Westbrook, how do you see these two guys playing together in that Billy Donovan system?
Well, I mean, Paul is a star player. I mean, we know that. I mean, he can take over games. We know how dominant Westbrook can be at times. So they're going to have to figure out a way to incorporate that, which they will. I mean, now the top players are trying to, get together and give themselves the best chance to win because they see what other teams are doing. So I was a little surprised he went to Oklahoma City from the standpoint of the deal, but at the end of the day, Paul's going to be a free agent, and we'll see if he's very comfortable in Oklahoma City or if he wants to move on and get the long-term deal and things. So a lot of variables, but they'll figure it out. Guys figure it out. I mean, they're too good of players. Billy will put him in an area where, Paul feels comfortable. Obviously, Westbrook's going to have the ball a lot. Paul's going to have the ball a lot. They'll figure it out. And it's the same way with other teams. Everyone always says, there's not enough balls or not. There is. You just have to put them in a system where guys are in their comfort zone. And guys like the ball in certain areas of the court, preferably in some cases. And Paul is no different. So they'll figure it out. But there's going to be a learning curve. There always is, from a personality standpoint, from, a terminology standpoint. And that takes a little bit of time. But they're veteran guys, and especially a Paul George level player is not going to have an issue. He's a basketball player. Put him on the court and let's figure it out.
One of the things that I think is a variable here, Vinny, is the development of Steven Adams. When I look at Adams, yeah, I see a guy that I think can average like 18 a game. And I think he can be a low post scorer. And I don't know what you saw in him last year, but I didn't see the development. I didn't see that next step. And look, that may have a lot to do with the fact that Kevin Durant wasn't there and there's more pressure on him underneath the rim as guys sort of just drop down and they don't fear any of those outside shooters. But I feel like Paul George's presence and maybe a more concerted effort on the part of Westbrook and George to get Adams involved, I think he could be that third guy. I think he has the talent to be that inside threat to complement those two outside guys.
No, I agree. I think the difference last year for him, especially without Kevin, the spacing wasn't as good. And I think with Paul, the spacing will be better, which will give guys more lanes to drive, which will be dump-off passes. We know how big and strong Steven is. He can finish around the rim, get to the free-throw line. It's not a post-up game, but maybe they can get him some early post-ups in transition, some easy baskets that way. But I've seen improvement. Every year he's gotten better. Last year, I think, was a little bit different because of the season Westbrook had, and they were trying to figure out after playing with Durant for so many years how it's all going to work. I think they'll be more comfortable this year. And then when you add Paul, like I said, the spacing and the ability to finish games out and not put everything on Westbrook, obviously will give them a shot in the arm. But the spacing for big guys, getting them easy ones around the rim, on the break, early transition, post-ups, I think Steven Adams definitely can improve in those areas, and I think he will.
All right, so let's talk about Gordon Hayward and him going east to Boston. The Celtics, They prioritized him. They wanted Paul George, they wanted Jimmy Butler, but they really, really wanted Gordon Hayward. They just believe out there that he is a guy that, the catch-and-shoot skills, the play off the dribble, the athleticism, obviously the Brad Stevens connection, he was the perfect fit for this team. And I'll tell you, Vinny, I think Gordon Hayward represents at least a 7-win improvement. I think he makes them a 60-win team next year if everybody stays healthy. Because I look at Hayward replacing Jay Crowder, and I watched a lot of those Celtic games. I was in Boston a lot for them. And Jay Crowder could get hot from the outside, but he missed a lot of shots. I mean, he's a streaky shooter from three-point range and a streaky offensive player in general. Gordon Hayward's not. Gordon Hayward is an extremely efficient offensive player. And just by giving Gordon Hayward Jay Crowder shots, I think that's a 7-win improvement. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're on Cleveland's level, but man, I think they're at least the one seed again next year, given what we know about the Cavaliers.
I it's hard to dispute that. I mean, Gordon Hayward is a fantastic player, averages over 20 points, but he can take you off the dribble. He's more athletic than you think, sneaky athletic. He's got good size. He can switch pick and rolls for you. So, yeah, I mean, when you have a chance to add a high-level quality player like that in the prime of his career, I mean, that's a big shot in the arm for your organization. So I expect him there'll be obviously a great relationship between coach and him. He'll understand how things are going to be run. He'll fit in easily, I think, with the chemistry of that team. The guys know there how important he is. He knows how important he is. But at the end of the day, win and lose as a team. So finding a niche for him that he's comfortable with, the way they want to play, but he's going to knock shots down. He's going to score the basketball because he has versatility. He can score on the break. He can score in the post. If you put a small guy in him, he can jump over him. So, yeah, I mean, he's a dynamic player. He's an all-star for a reason, and he's just coming into the prime of his career, so a perfect time for the Celtics to get him.
You know, you mentioned the post, and I think that's where he's going to be a big weapon because if you look at the way Boston's played under Brad Stevens,
sure.
You know, their bigs are floor spacers. You know, it's Olynyk, right. And it's Horford and even Jared Sullinger before then. They like to play through their guards in the post. Marcus Smart last couple of years. Before that, Evan yep. Turner was a big post guy. I Utah didn't necessarily need Gordon Hayward to be a post player as often as he could be, but I think Brad Stevens is going to exploit him in the post. I think you'll see that, 6'8 athletic frame going up against 6'5, 6'6, guards and swingmen and really being an asset to the Celtics.
Well, and he's a willing passer, and he's a good passer. So at the end of the day, like you said, when you have bigs that can space the floor, where are you coming from the double team? If you're going to come off the big from a double team, you got another big on the weak side rotating. And now, that's what you want. You want teams rotating and closing out and things, and now you're going to attack off the dribble. But Hayward's going to score the basketball, whether it's in the post or anywhere. But it's an area where the Celtics now, like you said, with their post-up guards, they can slow the tempo down against certain teams if they need be, if they see a matchup, especially when they're in the penalty. And they can back, Gordon Hayward can take somebody in the post off a set, a screen, not a lot of body contact, get the basketball. And now you're at his mercy because he's going to jump over you. He's going to go by you, especially if you're in the penalty. And if you come off a big, he's going to be a willing passer and move the basketball and make the game easier on the weak side.
I wonder now, though, exactly how big a problem it is that they don't have a lot of size up front. I mean, right now it's Al Horford and, cross yeah. your fingers and hope Ante Zizic turns into a decent player, rotation player. And that would scare me a little bit, Vinny, that you're looking yeah. at a front line that's been completely decimated by all these offseason moves.
And we went into the playoffs in last season saying, the Celtics are, vulnerable on the glass and things like that. I think the only time you really saw it was against Cleveland, with Tristan Thompson and things. So, at the end of the day, the East is not nearly as difficult as we know that. Cleveland is obviously the head above people at times, how they'll take the regular season, how they'll play through that. Boston had a fantastic year last year. You have those two teams, obviously Toronto. But I just think Boston is going to kind of figure it out as they go with Hayward. They're going to have to get some more bigs. I think they need a little bit more length, but they have a lot of assets. They have a lot of moving parts. And Danny obviously is experienced and has gone through this for many years. So he knows what he's doing and he'll figure it out as they go. But Gordon Hayward piece obviously is a big one moving forward.
Yeah, and look, I think you're right. I think this is a chance for Boston to be opportunistic with all their assets right now. It's not exactly like they're playing with house money at the moment, but they probably know that Cleveland's still the class of the conference at this point, and they're a year or so away. But, I think, and I don't know who that guy is. I mean, I speculated in a column this week that Marc Gasol could become available at some point because I look at what Memphis is doing and what's going on down there, and yeah, I mean, Zach Randolph goes, Tony Allen probably right behind him. They could be looking to move off a 32-year-old player making big money at this stage if they can get real assets back in return. But they've got to start looking for a big because, Cleveland, we don't know what's going to happen with LeBron, but if he's around for the next few years, I mean, they're the obstacle. And if they're if they're able to play bully ball with you and you can't match up with that, that's a problem, no matter how many skill position players you have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, LeBron's at a whole nother level now. I mean, he's just, he dominates when he needs to dominate, and he's one of the all-time greats. We know that. So, Cleveland's got some issues. They got to, Marcus Stahl's in Memphis. I hope hope he stays with Connolly. They're good buddies, and they've had great success there for them. But if you have an opportunity, you know, to go to Marc Gasol, that puts you at a whole nother level. You're talking about one of the best bigs we have in the game. This is probably the best passing big or one of the best, and he's a dynamic player. He takes your team to the next level. That's how good he is. So we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot of moving parts. A lot of things are going on this year. We just got to let things settle down. Teams have to fill in the holes now after they've spent the majority of their money. And, you know, and we're going to see how they all pan out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there might be an opportunity for the Celtics to grab a bargain basement type of guy, but I wonder what happens with that front court as they look ahead and look at Cleveland up front. But let's talk about Cleveland and where they go from here. Not a lot of movement this offseason. They re-signed Kyle Korver. They were trying to make a deal to get Paul George. That fell through. They've dangled Kevin Love in some trade talks, as it seems like they always do. I mean, Kevin Love is perpetually on the trade block, but you know, is there a move out there that they can make? Or I guess in more of the sense of what they need to do to try to close the gap with Golden State, do you see a move that they should make, whether it's at a certain position or maybe to get more athletic or get more defensive minded? Is there something they can do, you know, over the next couple of months that can close that gap that they're trying to close with Golden State?
I mean, Carmelo, I mean, that would be the only guy that
you think he helps them
in terms of. I just think he's a player that can take pressure off LeBron and Kyrie, and you have to game plan for him, and you can isolate him, and he's a problem. I mean, he can take you off the dribble. He can score, you know. So, I mean, you're not getting Paul George. You're not getting Gordon Hayward. You're not getting Jimmy Butler. You know, what other top-level player is out there? I mean, Carmelo's been a proven scorer in the league. Like I said, you have to game plan for him. He can switch. He can play in the post. You can play LeBron and Carmelo together. And Tristan, probably. Now you have enough scoring on the floor. You have enough spacing on the floor with Kyrie and whoever else, or whoever Smith. But, you know, I'd have to look at it more. But, you know, other than like a deal you make, and they don't have a ton of assets from that standpoint, I don't think. So you either get buyout guys. I mean, they're taxed. They're in the tax as a team, so they have some financial issues. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, getting back real quick to the Celtics thing, I know they don't have bigs, but what's the league now? The league is one big and four smalls. And the Celtics, depending on who they have to move to get Hayward done, you know, Marcus Smart is a tough guy. Avery Bradley's a tough guy. Jay Crowder's a tough guy. We know Gordon can play, and he's a tough kid. So, you know, you got Horford. They could play one big, four smalls. They'll get beat on the glass a little bit, but their three-point shooting is going to improve, so they can play a point-minus game there. So a lot of teams are looking at this. You want to have bigs, but you want to have skilled bigs with versatility as well. And like you said before, the shooting bigs, the spacing bigs, obviously are a key for them.
Yeah, they're big, and look, their guards are relentless. I mean, the guys you mentioned are very good rebounders.
Yeah, they're tough.
Yeah, at their position. I just wonder if it's at some point, now that they've reached this point where they've got multiple all-stars, they've, you know, add Al Horford to that mix, it's basically three all-star level players. You start looking at how you get out of the conference. And I don't know that you get out of the conference unless you can match up physically with Cleveland. I mean, you might be able to match them on a skill level, maybe. That might be a stretch too at this point, but physically, they are just completely overwhelmed. And I don't know how they close that gap, Vinny, without adding some kind of significant player to keep Thompson, Kevin Love, and others off the boards.
No, I agree. I mean, yeah, the physicality of those guys is impressive, but the X factor we all know is LeBron, and this was fantastic. So you can say what you want, but yeah, rebounding, we know how important it is, but the space and pace and this, you know, the pace and the space game now is so key, the three-point shooting and things. So if you don't have the physicality of a front line like that, then obviously you got to find other ways to give yourself an opportunity to be successful. And maybe that's more of a spacing game. We know how tough Isaiah Thomas is. He's been fantastic. The physicality of their guards and small forwards, and now adding a guy that is going to go get you at 20 points as well in Hayward, maybe that's enough points to make off the differential of the lack of rebounding, but we'll wait and see.
All right, let's look out west for a second with the deal that brought Chris Paul over to the Rockets. I mean, Chris clearly wanted to play in Houston, wanted to play with James Harden. Now you have two guys that are playmakers, you know, top five assist players in Harden and Chris Paul, but two guys that are used to having the ball in their hands for a lot of the times. How do you think Mike D'Antoni handles that with these two ball-dominant type of guards?
Well, Mike is an experienced coach. He's done a fantastic job, and he's a good friend. So at the end of the day, they'll figure it out. I mean, they're both smart players. They're both, perennial all-star players, the highest level players we basically have in the league. So there'll be a system where they'll want to play with pace. They'll want to get the ball in those guys' hands at shot clock because they can create so well. There's going to be some sacrificing. There always is. But, you know, players are, you know, James and Chris are smart players. They'll figure it out, how they need to play to be successful, how they can help their teammates be better, get them easy, you know, whether it's Capella or any of these guys. I mean, they're going to make the game so much easier for them. Chris will, be the general out there at times, and James will be too because he's so effective in the pick and roll situation. But I just think it's one of those things where they'll figure it out. And I think with Mike's system, the way he is, he's very good offensively. So they'll have sets where they can get some easy ones for both of them. They'll touch the ball. They'll get off the ball. And I think there's going to be some sacrifice, but both those guys will get a lot of touches.
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out too. They're too skilled. And I look at last year, and it looked to me like James Harden ran out of gas at the end of that season. I think a big part of that was there really wasn't a secondary ball handler there. I mean, Patrick Beverley is a good player, but he's a defensive-minded guy, makes some shots, but is not your traditional playmaker. I think having another primary ball handler is going to make Harden even stronger towards the end of the season. But I'm curious, as you know, you know Chris Paul, a guy that is on his next the risk in the Rockets deal here is that they're probably going to give Chris Paul a max level extension long term, 4 or 5 years, whatever it is, when this contract is up at the end of next season. I know that the Clippers were wary about paying Chris Paul, at 37 years old, $40+ million. Do you think Chris Paul is the kind of player that's going to age well? I mean, I know it's asking you to project a few years down the line, but that to me would be the fear in making a deal like this, that you're paying a late 30s guard, more money than you're paying anybody else on the team.
Yeah, I mean, that thing, though, is Chris is competitive. He loves to play. He can always be the general out there. I think what you said is going to be key. I think, Chris will be able to give Harden some rest. Harden will be able to give Chris some rest. If Harden goes to the bench, Chris can be a little more aggressive offensively. Chris is on the bench, Harden will do his thing. So the efficiency numbers for them will be more key than anything in controlling their turnovers. So, when you're paying guys that much money at that late in their, stage of their career, hey, there's no crystal ball. How healthy are guys going to be? How effective are they going to be? Some are going to be more than others. Guys that are very, playing at a high level right now, they might not be playing at a high level. Guys that kind of are just kind of going into getting into that age, maybe they play better then. Who knows? The system, where they're at, it's just really tough. But as a guard, I mean, if you look at the history of guards, they struggle more than the big guys, but the game is different now. There's not as many big guys. The post-up game isn't as important as the three-point shooting and being able to control. Who are the best teams? The best teams are obviously teams that have, high-level guards, or they have LeBron James. We'll have to wait and see. You look in the East. Isaiah Thomas is one of the best players. Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul. The list goes on and on. So it's hard to say. I mean, but there's so much money out there. If Chris really wanted to stay, I can't believe that they wouldn't have figured out a deal. But he felt maybe he wanted to go to Houston. I just can't believe they wouldn't give him the fifth year to keep him after the success they've had the last, 5, 6, 7 years there with him there.
Yeah, I think push comes to shove, they probably would have given him the full max deal. Yeah. But I do think there was some sense of relief. They wanted Chris Paul, they love Chris Paul, but there was some sense of relief they didn't have to pay him at the back end of that deal. All right, before I let you go, I want to ask you about maybe the one of the more interesting twosomes in the NBA. That's down in New Orleans with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. Had about half a season together, mixed reviews. They put up some numbers. They didn't win a lot of games. Now you have, basically the I don't say the future of the organization, but it's a pretty significant year for that organization. I mean, if these two work, all of a sudden you've got a dynamic, talented front court that can lead you into the future. If they don't, Cousins is probably gone, and who knows what Davis is going to want to do at the end of the year. Just looking at these two and what you saw last year in the small sample size, how do you think they do together in a full season in New Orleans?
Well, they're going to be better. We know that. How are they going to play the high-low game? What is their exact style going to be? We know Alvin likes to get up and down the court, but Cousins is more of a plotter type of guy. Anthony likes the ball at the elbow. DeMarcus does. So they're going to have to figure out a system where both those guys get their touches. Like you said, they're dynamic scores. They're going to score with two guys on them. They're that talented. So, but what does the rest of the team look like? You know, I know they signed Holiday. I think he's a quality player. But what else is around those guys? They're going to have enough spacing, shooting. What's their health going to be like? But really, it's going to boil down to how those guys are used in the system, how effective they are, because the offense is going to run through those guys. The offense is going to run through Anthony Davis or DeMarcus Cousins, whether it's a high-low at the elbow, some type of dribble handoff things, obviously early post-ups for those guys. Then there'll be the pick-and-roll things because you can space both of them because one or the other can be in the pick-and-roll diving and the other one can space because they both can shoot. So a system where everyone's involved, a system where everyone's touching the basketball, but we know the offense and everything is running through them. Now, defensively, how are they going to guard pick-and-rolls? Are they going to switch things with those guys? DeMarcus, the farther he gets away from the basket, he's going to struggle a little bit, but he's lost weight, it sounds like. He's very focused. So we'll have to wait and see. But like you said, I mean, you're talking about two of the most talented guys we have in the league. I don't care at any position. I mean, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus are special. And now Alvin and his staff have to figure out a way to use all those guys and incorporate the rest. But shooting from the perimeter for that team with those type of post-up players obviously is key.
Yeah, 20 years ago, I mean, Cousins and Davis would have been a front court. Any team in the league would have salivated over.
But yeah.
I mean, but the way the game has changed, Vinny, can you have two, you know, basically seven-footers playing on the court together? Does the evolution of the game allow that?
I would probably, you know, when you say seven-footers, I'd probably say no. But when you look at these two guys, they're both so versatile and so skilled. They can handle the ball. They can pass. They can shoot. They can post up. I mean, they can run. I mean, especially Davis can really run the court. They can catch lobs. They can throw lobs. I mean, they're not the normal seven-footers. So that's why it's so intriguing, because you're talking about guys 7, 6, 10, 11, 7 feet that can do all those things. So that position, that 7-footer that's a rim protector and all these things, they're not those guys. They're rim protectors, but at the end of the day, they're basketball players. I mean, they're skilled like, you know, 3-men and guards and things. So you got to figure out a system where they can use those skills and take advantage of big guys. And the thing that's key for them, too, is they both can shoot from the outside. So you have to guard them, which is a huge advantage, because now that takes another defender not sagging off in the lane. You got cutters, you got things. If you catch the ball at the elbow and you don't guard them, that's a layup for those guys. They can shoot the basketball.
Yeah, it should be fun at the very least.
Oh,
maybe not.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But who they put around those guys to me will be key. I think they'll figure out. Those two guys will figure it out. How they will figure it out, but it's the rest of the roster that they have to be strong with and be smart with in terms of building around those guys. Because if I'm them two, that's what I'm looking at. Okay, who are we playing with, and how good can we actually be?
Well, they could use a healthy Eric Gordon, the guy they had a couple of years ago. I mean, the Eric Gordon of last year would have been great on New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no question.
I love Eric. I coached him in the Clippers. Great guy, and had a great year and sixth man. So he deserves it. He worked hard and went to training camp there last year, and he was ready to go.
Yeah. Well, Vinny, I appreciate it, man. I know you're headed out to Vegas this week. I hope to catch up with you out there. And thanks for taking some time to join me here on the pod.
Anytime, but I hope to see you out there, and we'll talk soon.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Billy King and Vinny Del Negro for joining the show. A reminder, you can download Archive Podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.